The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, my name is Naomi Lambert from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share articles with you from The Assembly, which publishes in-depth reporting on North Carolina at theassemblync.com. Today we're going to start with what may now be a distant memory, but those snowy days. It's from the K-12 education section and it's called North Carolina's Snowy Day Problem. The reporter is Sarah Heiser-Graybeal. The call came at night in early December. Chatham County schools would be closed the next day due to a forecast of snow. In Pittsburgh, Jesse Mushaw went into action. First, it's the conversation with my spouse. Can you stay with them? No, you can't. You have to go. Mushaw spent the next hour cancelling all her clients for the next day. Mushaw is a speech therapist who works primarily with autistic children and teens. Because she's paid by the session, she loses about $500 per day when she has to cancel. She also worries about her clients when school and therapy routines are disrupted. No matter what an amazing caregiver you are, that's going to take a toll on your nervous system, Mushaw said. Neurodivergent kids feel those changes. When you are frazzled, they are now frazzled. In the end, 0.1 inch of snow fell, according to the National Weather Service's Raleigh office. Chatham County Schools said in a Facebook post that evening that although the county did not fall within the official winter weather advisory area, they were still calling for a two-hour delay the next day due to a slight chance of black ice in the morning. A winter storm put school on ice for parts of the state a few weeks ago and another was forecast for the following weekend. But snow has long been rare in most of North Carolina, lending every dusting a mythic excitement. For school-aged kids, these days mean snow angels, movies and hot cocoa. At least that's the nostalgic snow day memory. With climate change, snowfall has decreased significantly over the past 50 years. According to the North Carolina State Climate Office, Raleigh's average annual snowfall dropped from 8 inches between 1961 and 1990 to 5.1 inches in the last three decades, a 36% dip. Other locations around the state saw decreases of more than 50%. In Forsyth County, days with wintry precipitation fell by about a third over that period, based on National Weather Service numbers from three data collection points in the county. The tally includes snow and sleet, but not freezing rain, which is difficult to distill from historical data. But the number of school closures due to winter weather was roughly the same over those 60 years. Winston-Salem, Forsyth County schools data show. Six other school districts the Assembly contacted didn't maintain records dating back that far, and neither does the State Department of Public Instruction. Still, teachers and administrators across the state said in interviews that they believe their districts have become more likely to delay or cancel school. At the same time, more families have dual-earning parents now. Fewer than half of married couples in the 1960s had two working spouses, compared with about 65% in 2010. Taken together, this has changed the quintessential snow day. Instead of snow, cold and rain, instead of movies, remote learning, instead of hot cocoa, parents glued to laptops still attempting to do their jobs. There are lots of reasons for school systems to be cautious, including large districts where bad weather can have different effects than in rural and urban areas, bus driver shortages and painful memories of bad calls in years past. Finding a solution that works for everyone is a little bit of a rabbit hole, said Matthew Palmer, project director of NC State University's School and Community Aligned Master Planning, which advises school districts on complex problems. I'll forewarn you, because I've been down it a couple hundred times, there's reasonable positions to take across the spectrum of the topic. Meanwhile, many families struggle when schools close. Schools are a site for more than just learning, said Jennifer Arousquin, associate professor of public health education at UNC Greensboro. They provide nutrition, They're sometimes a site for mental health counselling, and particularly in the younger grades, after-school care is super important. After a string of three weather-related closures in December, Morel Cacciabaudo, an instructional assistant at Lions Farm Elementary in Durham, asked a kindergartner whether he enjoyed his time at home. He gave me a thumbs down, and I'm like, "Oh, buddy, what's wrong? You didn't get to have any fun." And he's like, "No, I wanted to be at school." "School is one of his safe places," Cacciabaudo said, and it was just so heartbreaking to me. Sunny and 43 degrees. The fact that school closures have held steady even as snowy days decreased comes as no surprise to those with experience making such decisions. Chris Blyce, Assistant Superintendent of Operations at Chatham County Schools, said when he started in education 45 years ago, the idea that we would send students home or cancel after-school events was kind of a non-existent thing. Several factors have converged to make administrators more likely to close schools due to wintry weather. In 2005, a surprise inch of snow turned to ice on roads in Wake County, causing gridlock that prevented buses and parents from picking up children. About 3,000 students were trapped at their schools overnight. "The memory of that," Blyce said, "is pretty strong in a lot of people's minds." Blyce also says that families have pushed harder for school districts to make school closure calls the night before. But it can be hard to predict what the roads will look like that far in advance. On a typical day with snow potential, the temperature is anywhere around 30 to 35, hovering around that critical value, said Jonathan Blaze, meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service in Raleigh. With less precise data and pressure to make earlier calls, administrators tend to err on the side of caution. The worst days are when it's like, "You make a call and then it's sunny and 43 degrees," Palmer said, referring to his previous job as Senior Executive Director of Operational Services for Durham Public Schools. Parents are saying, "What? Who made this decision? And you've got to own it." A shortage of transportation workers has further narrowed the margin of error for many school districts. Relatively low pay leaves many bus drivers, as well as teachers, nutrition workers, custodians and other staff, residing outside the area where they work. Even if conditions are viable in a school district, workers may not be able to commute safely. For frustrated parents, the solution to North Carolina's snow woes can appear simple. Buy more ploughs and pre-treat the roads more thoroughly. North Carolina's Department of Transportation has an annual budget of $60 million for storm preparation and snow and ice. During wintry weather, the department uses 1,250 dump trucks to plough and spread salt and sand, typically starting with priority routes like interstates and four-lane highways, and then moving to secondary roads. The department said its budget has grown over time, but has remained steady in recent years. Between NCDOT staff and our contracting partners, we feel we have adequate resources to address typical weather events, NCDOT spokesperson Jordan Campos said. Still, with shaded rural areas and frequent black ice, which the department noted is dangerous for its vehicles too, the department often can't get back roads cleared quickly enough to avoid school closures. In planning, we have these things that are called wicked problems, Palmer said. Good people dedicate all of their thinking lives to solving them, but never do. I'd say we're in that space right there. A rain dance somewhere. Reetha Daniel Ruth's morning started at 4 a.m. Her first busload of students enters Southwest Elementary at 7:15 a.m., but Daniel Ruth has them in the parking lot by 7, so that if they need to decompress, they can, just so they can be happy for a few minutes before they go in. Daniel Ruth has been driving for Durham Public Schools for 32 years. She knows all her students by name, and she's driven for many of the same families for more than 10 years. She's seen it all: ice, snow, flooding, and even tornadoes. As of this story's publication, Durham hadn't responded to a request for data on school closures over time. But Daniel Ruth thinks that they close much more often than they used to for inclement weather, and she appreciates the prioritization of safety. but she worries about staff who lose money when school buses don't run. When Durham schools closed for 3 days of wintry weather in December 2025, Daniel Ruth and other staff who are paid hourly rather than salaried had the option of completing a series of online modules in exchange for a day of pay. For the other 2 days, staff with accrued paid time could use that to receive pay. Newer staff without that time weren't paid for the days off. Even salaried teachers can be affected. During those same closures in Durham, Jessie Schmitz, who teaches English as a second language at Riverside High School, said she was instructed not to work remotely but to take paid sick days. Schmitz and Katia Baudo said principals in the district give teachers differing instructions on days with no school. DPS didn't respond to a request for comment. Though not ideal, like most teachers, she had plenty of work she could have done from home. Schmitz had accrued plenty of time off in 7 years of teaching. But talking to some beginning teachers who have almost no sick days, Schmitz said, they're freaking out. They're like, I used up 2 of my 3 sick days. What happens if I actually get the flu? In Asheville, Hurricane Helene served as an impetus for public school workers to seek better inclement weather policies. In December 2025, the Asheville City Association of Educators secured the right for all staff to telework on inclement weather days, hazard pay for essential staff asked to report to work, and an earlier call time for school closures. We unfortunately know what inclement weather looks like, said Carson Bridges, the association's president and a first grade teacher at Claxton Elementary. It actually ended up being the number one priority for everyone, making sure that even if it's a couple of days of snow and ice, all of our people are being taken care of. The Durham Association of Educators is also pushing for better inclement weather protections of classified staff. We didn't tell it to snow, Daniel Ruth said. Somebody might have been doing a rain dance somewhere, but it wasn't me. Rough sledding. For parents, the snow day problem remains. Clary Blanchard of Pittsburgh used to run North Carolina's COVID-19 immunization program as the director of the state's Department of Health and Human Services immunization branch. She took a remote job in the pharmaceutical industry to better juggle her responsibilities as the sole parent of 2 young children. Blanchard has a steady salary, but she rarely has enough sick days to cover daycare closures. I feel like I'm letting everybody down, Blanchard said. I'm not able to be the best, most present parent because I'm trying to multitask with my kids at home, and I'm not a good team member at work because I'm trying to work and take care of my dependent children. Kendred Mills and his family rent a townhouse in Greensboro, less than half a mile from their children's elementary school. The distance is easily walkable even in wintry conditions, making school closures frustrating. Because he and his partner both work in-person hourly jobs, they take turns calling out to stay home with the kids. But finances become difficult in seasons with many closures, like January 2025, when between delayed starts, early dismissals, remote learning days and teacher work days, Guilford County Schools held only 9 full days of school. We've gotten backed up on bills more than once, Mills said. And parenting stress can take a significant toll on children's mental health, said Dr. Rachel Riskind, a social developmental psychologist and professor emerita at Guilford College. It's one thing to have a one-off snow day. It's another thing to feel like up is down and left is right, and you never know what to expect in a given week. In an ideal world, employers would grant parents flexible leave. Meteorology would anticipate wintry precipitation down to the second, and North Carolina's road clearing capabilities would rival New England's. In the meantime, parents and teachers floated a range of solutions. Katia Baudo proposed that, as an instructional assistant, she could staff a neighborhood community center to give some kids a place to go when Durham schools can't open. Blanchard wondered aloud whether communities could organize to support each other so that solo parents like her don't have to do everything alone. In the meantime, school closures continue, sometimes for trace amounts of wintry weather and sometimes, like a few weeks ago, for actual ice storms. These are the real emergencies, Mewshaw said before the storm hit. She and her family had carefully prepped the generator, flashlights, camping stove and charging station. They were grateful not to lose power. The first days home from school were fun, but by midweek, Mewshaw had to hire a babysitter so she could go back to work. With most roads in the county appearing clear, it feels really excessive to have them out of school yet again, she said. Well, our next article is a different area again. It's health. We haven't had one of those for a while. This is a hospital was slated to open in 2025. Mired in bureaucracy, it's still a dirt field. And the article is by Andrew Jones from December of 2025. Madison County, tucked in the mountains of western North Carolina, has no hospital and just three ambulances serving its roughly 22,000 people. The ambulances frequently travel back and forth to Mission Hospital in Asheville, the largest and most central hospital in the region. Trips can take more than 2 hours, according to Mark Snelson, director of Madison Medics EMS, the local emergency medical service. When we get busy and all three of them are gone, we have no ambulances in our county, he said. Snelson and others in Madison County aren't seeking more ambulances. They want a hospital closer than Mission, and the state agrees. In 2022, North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services officials said Madison and three other mountain counties needed 67 more acute care hospital beds. The state raised that to 93 beds in 2024 and then to 222 by October 15th. But the only indication of a new hospital thus far is a 25-acre field of graded dirt with a sign planted beside the highway reading Future Home of Advent Health Weaverville. For the past 3 years, Mission Hospital's owner has contested Florida-headquartered Advent Health's attempt to build the hospital on land bought for $7.5 million in rural Weaverville, just minutes south of Madison County. It was supposed to open this year, an event that would have defied the national trend of rural hospital closures. The irony is that the very law that calls for the new hospital, the state's Certificate of Need, or CON law, has been used to prevent further construction. Such laws are intended to cap unfettered healthcare expansion by allowing new hospitals and expansions only when a state can document a need for them. But the legal process has tied up the proposed Weaverville Hospital in court, just as such other laws have done with projects in Tigard, Oregon, Connecticut, and Fort Mill, South Carolina. All states had Certificate of Needs laws until 1987, when the federal government repealed a mandate requiring them. Today, North Carolina is one of 35 states with the laws still on the books. 12 others have repealed them or let them expire, and some, such as Montana and South Carolina, have significantly weakened theirs amid concerns they limit healthcare access and boost costs. President Donald Trump's Federal Trade Commission and Department of Justice are among those questioning the need for the laws. Where are Certificate of Need laws in place? 35 states and Washington, D.C. still have a Certificate of Need or CON laws intended to prevent unfettered healthcare expansion. In North Carolina, too, opposition to the state's Certificate of Need law has surfaced in both the General Assembly, where a bill to repeal the law has been dormant since April, and more prominently in the state Superior Court. But some hospital industry organizations, healthcare economists, and Certificate of Need lawyers argue that, though the laws create bureaucracy that can delay projects, that's just not a justification to do away with them. The principle behind Certificates of Need is to hold at bay what supporters say is unnecessary expansion and price inflation brought on by a free market, which makes healthcare more expensive for everyone. If the principle is worth preserving, don't abandon the principle, said Mark J. Silberman, a healthcare attorney with the Benesch Law Firm and former counsel for Illinois' Certificate of Need Board. Improve the process to allow the principle to flourish. Who should fill the need? Mission Health is the largest healthcare network and the largest employer in the Tar Heel State's share of the Appalachians. Nashville-based HCA Healthcare bought the century-old non-profit six-hospital system for $1.5 billion in 2019, converting it to a for-profit operation that serves an 18-county region. The Dogwood Health Trust, a non-profit established as part of HCA's purchase of Mission Health, helps fund some of this coverage. Though Advent Health already owns one hospital in the North Carolina mountains, about a 30-mile drive from the Weaverville site, its bid to build a new one represents a threat to HCA's stronghold. Mission argues it is best positioned to meet the needs the state says exist in the Madison County region. Not all acute care beds are the same, Mission Health spokesperson Nancy Lindell said. Instead of adding more beds at facilities that are unable to provide the complex medical and surgical care needed, the region would be better served by expanding bed capacity at Mission Health. An Eastern North Carolina eye surgeon's lawsuit filed in 2020 against the state's health agency and top state officials alleged the state's certificate of need law has nothing to do with protecting the health or safety of real patients. The ophthalmologist, Jay Singleton, has argued the law prevented him from performing surgeries at his own center because the state didn't see a need to duplicate services already provided at the local hospital where he was obligated to operate. In early November, Republican State Treasurer Brad Briner, the State Employees Association of North Carolina, and several academics who study such laws nationally filed amicus briefs supporting Singleton's case and urging a judge to reject the state's attempt to dismiss it. I've characterized con law as permission slip to compete, said Thomas Stratman, a George Mason University economics professor who co-authored the brief. It's as if when a McDonald's wanted to open up a shop next to a Burger King, they have to go to the state regulator to ask if that's okay. Stratman argued that instead of raising prices, more competition would give hospitals and providers greater leverage in negotiating with insurance companies. That view aligns with a stance the federal government has held for almost 40 years. With varying degrees of fervor under Democratic and Republican leadership, the Federal Trade Commission and Department of Justice have argued that the laws are anti-competitive and bad for consumers. The Justice Department did not respond to questions about its current position, and the FTC declined to comment on the record. Con laws create barriers to entry and expansion, limit consumer choice, and stifle innovation, the Federal Trade Commission wrote in an April letter to Rhode Island Governor Dan McKee, a Democrat, as the state's legislature considered, but ultimately abandoned, amendments to its Certificate of Need law. For these reasons, the agencies have consistently suggested that states repeal or retrench their con laws. It's personal. In a June letter to Trump and congressional leaders, Senate Democrats named five North Carolina hospitals on a list of rural hospitals in danger of closing if the president's then pending spending and tax cut legislation called the One Big Beautiful Bill became law, citing research from the University of North Carolina Shepps Center. Two of the five North Carolina hospitals on that list, Angel Medical Center and Blue Ridge Regional Hospital, are part of the Mission Health System. Both had three consecutive years of negative profit margins, like hundreds of others on the list. Lindell, the Mission Health spokesperson, said HCA is committed to keeping those two facilities open. Even so, Madison County Health Department Director Tammy Cody said the needs in the region remain and the Certificate of Needs appeals process has slowed down getting help. This isn't theoretical, it's personal, she said. Every delay means a mother in labor risks a longer ride, an elder with chest pain waits longer for help, or a worker injured on the job faces unnecessary complications. Advent Health spokesperson Victoria Dunkel said the hospital system supports the state's law partly because it protects rural access to health care and ensures the community has a voice in the process. The legal process has kept families waiting, she said, but Advent Health plans to move forward with the Weaverville Hospital as soon as possible. Snelson, the ambulance service director, voiced a question many in the region have asked since the hope of a new rural hospital surfaced. Why is it a bad thing for another hospital to come in here to take some of the stress off of Mission? He asked. Within a day of it opening, it's going to be full. Finally, we have time for a little update from politics and government. This is about Morrisville, which is beginning to build a downtown. The article is by Sarah Day Owen Wiskirchen. This year, Morrisville residents will see the town centre move from plans to reality as it rises out of the ground. Unlike other Western Wake towns, Morrisville doesn't have a downtown or central gathering destination. The Morrisville Town Centre will change that. The first phase is expected to open in 2027. This is probably the most significant project the town has undertaken in the last 25 years, said Morrisville Town Manager Brandon Zudima. It's been a long time coming. The plan to create a town centre goes back to its adoption by the town council's predecessors, the Morrisville Board of Commissioners, in 2007. The project broke ground in September last year. The guiding principles, Zuidima said, have stayed the same. To create a higher density town centre that combines residential, office, retail and civic facilities. A mix of uses consistent with the town's identity and quality of life. To leverage public investment to attract private investment. Preserve Morrisville's historic crossroads, architecture and small town feel. Connect communities through greenways, parks, trails and sidewalks. Establish spaces for recreation, community gatherings, cultural events and the Western Wake Farmers Market. The total project will span a 25-acre area and the total cost is anticipated to be an estimated $20.9 million, with the largest amount from bond proceeds. The newly formed district, when complete, will encompass more than just newly built amenities. It will include a historic church, a historic house, the already built dog park, library and the Indian Creek Trailhead and Park. This year, if you drive by the site or visit the Morrisville Community Library on Town Hall Drive, you will see two separate but contiguous projects, Zuidima said. They are the Town Green, which is where the Healthy Food Hub and Farmers Market was, is now under construction, and it will include public art, a stage, a lawn that holds up to 2,500 people, a play area, and the Farmers Market. And that is all we have time for. We're out of time for today's edition of The Assembly. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to tune in next time. I am Naomi Lambert for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is now available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.